Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is the next in a series looking at the financial implications of Russia's invasion of Ukraine on the global economy. And in today's episode, I want to talk about Russia itself. We've just seen a report published by the Institute of International Finance, which predicts that the economy will fall dramatically in 2022. It's going to fall further in 2023. But it's also predicting that Russia will see 15 years worth of economic gains wiped off by the current slump, and that they're going to experience a significant brain drain. So in this video, we'll have a look at that report and the findings and go into the details of what they're saying is going to happen. We'll then have a look at which companies have left Russia so far, and then I'll talk about the brain drain, what a brain drain is, and what the long-term implications of losing your most valuable people are for a country. We'll then have a look at what's going on in the Russian economy, and then I'll touch on two examples, the car industry and the beer industry. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary as to what I think is likely to happen in Russia over the next 3 to 6 months and what the impact of all of this is on the global economy. So before we get started on all that, as usual, I'm going to ask you for a thumbs up at some point during this video if you like the content. It really helps me with the YouTube algorithm, so I'd really appreciate if you could do that. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please do so. I'm still on that push for 100,000 subscribers. It doesn't cost anything, so whilst I'm talking now, why don't you hit that subscribe button? And don't forget, I always include chapters in these videos, so if there's a section you're not that interested in or you haven't got time to watch the whole video, it's really easy to skip through it. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look in the description below where you'll find links to Buy Me a Coffee, Patreon and YouTube Super Thanks feature. The Institute of International Finance is the global association of the finance industry, with more than 450 members from more than 70 different countries. Its mission is to support the financial industry, and the members include commercial and investment banks, asset managers, insurance companies, sovereign wealth funds, hedge funds, central banks, and development banks. This map shows the geographic location of the organizations and bodies that contribute to the Institute. And as you can see, they come from all of the different continents, including North America, South America, Africa, Europe, Asia, and it does include multiple institutions from Australia, even though it's not mentioned on this map. The IIF offers an independent source of global economic and financial research and provides a comprehensive assessment of the global outlook with a focus on key emerging economies and developments in international financial markets. The Institute collates databases on all of the countries that it covers, covering macroeconomic and financial information. And the team of capital market analysts and economists provide regular briefings and research notes on a wide variety of macro, regional and country issues. The Institute of International Finance has released a report on Russia, which states that the Russian economy will shrink 15% in 2022 and a further 3% in 2023, as the hit from Western sanctions, the exodus of companies, a Russian brain drain, and the collapse in exports wipes out 15 years of economic gains. This assessment is based on the assumption that there will not be a ceasefire in the war and that the sanctions will be expanded and tightened over the coming months. Alina Rybakova, the Institute's deputy chief economist, stated that the sanctions have triggered the full disintegration of 30 years of investment and went on to conclude that the economy would be hit even harder in the medium term. In response to the question about oil and gas prices rising, which have lifted Russia's current account surplus to record levels in recent months, Rybakova advised that the surplus, as well as the rebound in the ruble after the initial crash, should not be mistaken for thinking Russia's economy was holding up better than expected. Russian banks are flush with foreign exchange reserves due to the collapse in imports, but Russian businesses and consumers have nothing to spend it on, she said. The impact of sanctions will hit harder with time, especially if Europe cut oil and gas imports significantly, although she noted that it would take months, if not years, for this to have the full impact. The IFF report also forecasts that imports would fall 28% in 2022, exports will fall 25%, and that Russian gross fixed capital formation will contract 25%. In terms of the sanctions, the report indicated that we have a long way to go and stated that we are far from the top of the escalation ladder. Additional measures such as those related to the financial system and key Russian exports and imports would be possible and could lead to dramatic consequences for the Russian economy, as well as the government's ability to continue its war effort in Ukraine. However, the costs of such actions could be significant for the sanction-imposing countries as well. The findings of this report are really interesting because this is the first updated report that we've seen since the start of the war and since all of the different levels of sanctions have been imposed against Russia. It's forecasting a 15% fall in the economy this year and a further 3% next year. And I think those numbers are very realistic given what's going on. We've all seen that as the price of energy has increased, Russia has been gathering in more cash because it's still selling natural gas to Europe and it's still managing to find people to buy its oil. So it's still receiving all of that income. But I think the key things from this report are really what Russia is doing with that money. It's all very well gathering in the cash and harvesting in everything that you've been developing. But going forward, in the long term, Russia needs to keep developing. And the reference to the brain drain and the loss of companies and talent, I think, is something that's really telling. And that's something that I want to investigate further in this video. It's not just about the numbers, because you can produce numbers for this year, which may look quite healthy. But actually, in the long term, if you're losing a lot of critical people and companies, it doesn't really matter if you're still making money from selling oil. Your economy is going to suffer. The Yale School of Management have been keeping track of all of the companies who have relationships in Russia, whether that be trading relationships or actual operations or employees or whatever it might be. They've been following the movements of all of these companies since the start of the invasion. And they've been keeping a register of which companies are staying, which companies have been scaling back their investments, which companies have put a stop on everything, and which companies have withdrawn. I've talked about this list before, but it's constantly being updated, so it's worth having a look at where we are right now. As it stands at the moment, 324 companies have announced a complete clean break from Russia. So that means that they've halted all trade that they were doing and completely exited all of their operations. 476 companies have suspended all of their trade and operations in Russia. 162 companies have scaled back or reduced their business operations with Russia. And 161 companies have announced that they're postponing any future planned investment, development, or marketing activities whilst the war carries on. And it's been estimated that around 600,000 jobs are at risk in Russia as a result of the exodus of all of these companies. So before we talk about the impact of the brain drain on Russia, let's talk about what a brain drain is and what factors influence the movement of people. When we're talking about a brain drain, there are usually push and pull factors. Push factors are encouraging people to leave a particular area, and pull factors are encouraging people to come into a particular area. And it's usually a combination of both push and pull factors that encourage people to move geographically. In terms of the push factors, there are a variety of reasons why people will be encouraged to leave the place that they currently live. These can include issues such as substandard living conditions, low wages, discrimination, social unrest, political instability, lack of appropriate research facilities, lack of freedom, and insufficient educational system. For highly educated and ambitious people, it can simply be a lack of career opportunities or a lack of entrepreneurial potential in an area. In terms of the pull factors, these can range from a very basic level of political stability and good standards of living, right through to employment opportunities, higher wages, the potential to work in a centre of excellence, and to develop and better yourself in your career. So as you can see, there are a wide variety of factors as to why people are attracted into a particular area. And when people are pulled in, that's called a brain gain. You're bringing all the brains together, and that will help develop your country. And in Russia, over the last 30 years, there has been significant brain gain because they've opened up to the Western world. They have lots of natural resources that needed to be developed. And there are great opportunities because when you go to a country where the industry is relatively nascent and young, then you can go in and make a name for yourself and you can be at the forefront of all of those developments. And that's what's attracted in a lot of external investment into Russia over the last 20 years or so. And it's quite an exciting opportunity as an employee. If you're given the chance to go over to Russia and head up the Moscow office or the Russian arm of your business, then that can be quite prestigious in your company overall. And usually when you go overseas to these sort of places, it's really quite attractive from a financial perspective. You go on an expat salary. So anybody who's an expat usually gets paid lots and lots of money. They get to live in really flash places. They generally have lots of tax breaks, so you might not pay any tax if you're an expat. So it really is quite a flamboyant and extravagant lifestyle. And a lot of people who've been working in Russia over the last 20 years will have been living the high life. They'll have been getting paid lots of money. They'll be doing really interesting work, new forms of development, breaking into new markets. And it would have been quite an exciting time. And being posted to the Moscow office would have been something that had been quite attractive to a lot of executives all around the world. And from a research and development point of view, it's always exciting to go to a new market where they're developing new things if you want to be at the forefront of your industry. So it would have attracted in a lot of people who were looking at different ways of doing things, how to achieve better efficiencies, more economies, all of those exciting sort of things. So Russia has had a lot of attractions over the last 20 years or so and has brought in a significant amount of brain gain. However, over the last few months, we have seen all of those benefits completely wiped out. It is no longer attractive to go and work in Moscow. Nobody wants to get posted to the Russian office anymore. And in fact, most companies no longer have a Russian office. We have seen tens of thousands of overseas workers leave Russia in the last few months. So they have had a massive brain drain as a direct result of this war. They've lost all of this talent, all of this intellectual ability, all the research and development that was going on there, all the cutting edge things that have been happening, all of that has been stopped overnight. Virtually all of the investment from overseas companies has been completely stopped now in Russia. So the loss of all of this international talent is going to damage the Russian economy because you can't keep developing at the same rate. But unfortunately for Russia, it isn't just the loss of overseas talent. They're also losing a lot of Russian talent. This report from the Moscow Times reveals that almost 4 million Russians left the country in the first quarter of 2022. 3,880,679 Russians travelled for work, business, tourism and private reasons between January and March. And former Soviet countries, many of whom border Russia, saw a significant spike in arrivals after the 24th of February. As Russians who fled out of opposition to the war were joined by many who were worried about potential border controls, martial law and mass mobilisation. This chart shows the number of Russians arriving in former Soviet states compared with the same period from 2021. Now, one of the interesting statistics from this table is that over 328,000 Russians entered Ukraine in the first quarter of the year, which was a 1% increase on the period from last year. Now, I would assume that some of those people entered in the first 6 weeks before the war started and that the remainder all went into areas that was not in conflict. Almost 205,000 Russians entered Kazakhstan, which was a 1.7% increase on 2021. 134,000 entered Armenia, a 3% increase. 125,000 went to Estonia, more than 4% increase. And Georgia and Kazakhstan also saw increases of more than 4% in the same period. Alongside the former Soviet states, the other most popular destinations for Russians were Egypt, where more than 350,000 people went to, Turkey, more than 363,000, and the UAE, where more than 260,000 Russians went. Now, I don't have any statistics in terms of how many of those people were going on holiday and how many of those people were actually fleeing the country. But in terms of going on holiday, January to March is traditionally not a period when you would go on a holiday to Eastern Europe. It's the winter period. It's very cold. It's not very attractive. It's not really where you'll be taking your summer holidays. If you take your Speedos to Estonia in January to March, you're not going to need them unless it's with an indoor pool. In March, the head of the Russian Association for Electronic Communications, a non-profit group, told a parliamentary committee that as many as 70,000 IT professionals emigrated since the start of the special operation in Ukraine, as the invasion is officially termed in Russia. Many of these younger specialists are relatively wealthy, tech-savvy and able to work remotely. One IT specialist was quoted as saying, "At the start of the war, I was in a very advantageous position, working remotely with my salary paid in foreign currency, a new visa, a European vaccine and a repaired laptop. The day before my departure, it was announced that our Visa and MasterCards would stop working abroad. In my case, I was lucky that most of my savings were in cryptocurrency, and it was enough to take a flash drive with me to solve the issue of cashing out." A Russian economist at Bath Spa University in England said the mass departure of skilled and educated Russians reminded her of experiences in the fraught period after the collapse of the Soviet Union in the 1990s. It brings to mind the comparison with emigration in 1918 during the Russian Civil War and the 1990s. "We left Russia because our salaries were not being paid, so it was difficult to live. Although in the 90s it was mostly for economic reasons, now it is mostly political." Many of the people leaving are IT specialists, journalists, researchers and analysts. The political and business climate in Russia is becoming more difficult as tech firms lose access to services, customers and payments. The destination of these talented exiles are the Baltic states, Latvia, Estonia and Lithuania, if they have EU visas. Those who do not have visas travel to Turkey, Israel or the former Soviet republics and Central Asia. In the past, migrants from these former Soviet satellites have traditionally moved to Russia for work. However, now it is the reverse scenario, where young professional Muscovites are seeking their futures elsewhere. Uzbekistan has simplified the visa process and resident permits for IT professionals. Kazakhstan is also offering tax breaks and loans to tech entrepreneurs willing to relocate. The level of education of migrants from Russia has always been amongst the highest, according to the OECD, and that means that countries are getting very skilled specialists without paying for their education. President Putin is aware of the risk of this brain drain and in March signed a bill granting exemptions to army service and income tax for tech workers. However, this is not seen as enough to be able to retain this staff, and it's expected that a second wave of up to 100,000 tech professionals may leave Russia. In terms of the economy, we've now seen the inflation data for May, which shows that the 12-month rate of inflation is now at 17.1% in Russia. Now, this is down from 17.8% in April. However, it is still at an extremely high level. If you follow the channel, you'll know that when the war first started, Russia increased its interest rate from 9% to 20%. This was an emergency measure that was done to try to combat rising inflation. It's now starting to come down, but 17% is still an extremely high level. And there are still reports coming out of Russia of some shortages in shops, and we've seen a lot of shops have closed down. We know that Russia is still being paid billions of dollars in terms of all of the energy that it's selling to Europe and elsewhere around the world. So it's still receiving in large volumes of cash. However, the problems that Russia has, which are identified in the report we talked about earlier, is that they've now got limited access to imports. So a lot of countries have now closed their trading relationship. A lot of companies will no longer deal with Russia. So they're struggling to be able to buy in sufficient amounts of stock. You'll also know if you follow the channel that it was recently agreed by President Putin that they can now open up the parallel or grey market. So they can legally bring in all sorts of imports that are not authorised by those brand owners. So in theory, if they could find the shipment of 1 million iPhones, they would be legally sold in Russia without having any recourse in terms of Apple suing the Russian authorities because they've now allowed that system to operate. There are laws in place in most countries around the world to stop parallel imports because it damages the value of the brand if you've got black market product that's trading alongside it. However, in Russia at the moment, they've really only got the option of black market opportunities. So the data coming out of Russia right now about the economy is extremely limited. What we do know is that inflation is high and we've seen a movement in the value of the ruble over the last month or so. It's actually become the best performing currency in the world on paper. However, as I've discussed before, the market for the ruble is very limited. Nobody wants to buy rubles. None of the countries who were previously dealing with Russia from the Western world want to buy any rubles on a voluntary basis. They're being forced to do so for the purchase of natural gas, the way that the system has been set up. So in theory, there's still strong demand for the ruble. But actually, in terms of the open markets, very few of the traders around the world are actually trading in rubles. The only market that's happening right now is within the Russian banks. So in theory, the ruble's doing well, but in reality, it's really a currency that nobody wants to deal with in the Western world. Car sales in Russia plunged 83% in May, which was another historic low, as Western sanctions have decimated Russia's auto industry with parts shortages and spiralling prices. A variety of Western car makers have either suspended operations or left Russia since the sanctions took effect, and the country's car industry depends entirely on global supplies, and the shortages of parts has shrunk production volumes several times since the start of the war. Russian statistics agency Rosstat stated that car prices have jumped nearly 50% since the start of the war, which has slammed demand in a country where household incomes have declined whilst inflation has been hovering near 20-year highs. It's expected that new car sales in Russia will fall by at least 50% in 2022. One of the other industries at risk in Russia is the brewing sector. Russian breweries depend heavily on imports of raw materials such as hops. Complications with sending money to suppliers in Europe and America, as well as the disruption of supply chains, are now two of the most difficult issues facing the sector. The world's biggest foreign container lines, including the top three MSC, Maersk and CMA CGM, have temporarily suspended cargo shipments to and from Russia, whilst European countries sharing borders with Russia and Belarus have barred cargo vehicles registered in those countries from entering. Many foreign companies, including leading brewers Carlsberg, Anheuser-Busch and Heineken, have suspended sales in Russia and shipping trade has plummeted. This has put pressure on the economy and affected the habits of Russians used to a lavish selection of foreign-made alcohol. The beer situation is very cheerless, said an IT expert who works for a state financial organisation in Moscow. Warehouses are almost empty and restaurants are selling old stock. With foreign alcohol flows drying up, bars and stores are considering locally produced drinks. We've started looking for domestic alternatives for foreign beers, and as a result, the selection has changed drastically. Imported alcohol is now 20 to 50% more expensive, while local beers are slightly cheaper than imported ones used to be before the start of the war. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this report because the IIF is an independent body. It takes its research from a variety of institutions all around the globe. So it's not focused on one particular country. It doesn't have a particular bias against Russia. It's looking at the data and it's looking at the forecast in an independent manner. And their assessment is that the Russian economy will fall 15% this year and 3% in 2022. So that's not completely unexpected. But I think what the bigger takeaway from this report is really about the brain drain and the longer term impact of the sanctions. Because it's not just about Russia making it through the next 6 months or the next 12 months and then everything will go back to normal. Russia is needing to reinvent itself. It's going to lose a huge amount of investment from all of the companies that have been investing into it over the last 30 years. But more importantly than that, it's going to lose a lot of its intellectual capacity. The brain drain factor is huge. That's why cities and countries try to attract in the best of the best. You want to set up a center of excellence for whatever it is that you're doing. Because when you've got all of those people around the same table, that's when you get new developments and new ideas and new creativity. Because people who are at the forefront of their field, whether it be research and development or finance or pharmaceuticals or whatever it might be, or oil and gas, which is a good example for Russia, whatever field you're at the front of, if you are really wanting to develop and become better at what you do, you need to start doing new things and taking your business into new fields and coming up with new ideas. And that's really how the world works. That's what we benefited from for the last 100 years. People coming together and sharing the benefit of their knowledge. And 1 + 1 = more than 2. That's the whole concept of collaboration. And what Russia is doing right now is exiting from all of the collaborations that it's set up over the last 30 years. And this is going to put Russia back. Financially, it will be put back. They may be able to gather in income from the sale of oil and coal and natural gas. So they'll keep some money coming through the door. But if Russia becomes a pariah, if nobody wants to live in Russia because the political environment is so unattractive, because there's no freedom of speech, because you're not allowed to say anything, otherwise you might get arrested, then that's going to drive away anybody who's intellectual, who wants to have an open, more liberal lifestyle. So that's not going to be helpful to Russia's development long term. And I think really that is the key issue that I wanted to get over to you from this report, that it's not just about numbers. It's not just about if Russia can sell oil to India and China, then everything will carry on as it has been doing for the last 20 years. That really isn't the situation. There's a lot of intellectual capacity that you need in an economy to stay developing, to keep it moving forward. And that's really what Russia are losing hand over fist at the moment. We've got hundreds of thousands of people leaving Russia. And these are all the skilled people who don't want to live in a country where there's restrictions on their lifestyle, where they can't make any statements on social media, otherwise they might get arrested. Nobody wants to live like that in this day and age. So my final summary on this video is that the brain drain is going to be the most painful impact on Russia yet. So hopefully you found this video useful, informative, educational, and maybe a little bit of fun. If you've liked what I've said today, then please give me that thumbs up. And don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already.